Good morning, everybody. Our first speaker today is David Topper from the Virginia Center for Computer Music. Dave will present the Gaia graphical audio interface application. And we have a 8-speaker setup, right, for this talk?
No, this is stereo, the next
one. Oh, it's only stereo, okay. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, great, hello. Well, as you just said, my name is Dave Topper. I work at the Virginia Center for Computer Music, and I'm very happy to be giving this paper today because it was actually submitted to several other conferences over the past couple years and had to be withdrawn due to scheduling conflicts, and it seems very appropriate that a tool such as this is presented for the first time in front of the Linux community, because it would not exist if it weren't for several wonderful open source packages like GTK and Perl and, of course, Linux. So first, I'm just going to give a very quick slideshow with an overview of what I'm going to do, and then we'll get into some examples and a demo. So what is Gaia? Basically, it's a graphical front end to the RTCMix synthesis and effects processing language. Some of you may know what that is. I'll show you. It combines Perl, RTCMix, and the GNOME GTK GUI environment. It can also be thought of as an IDE for Perl. It communicates to RTCMix via the new RTCMix embed module with a special extension written to it called Perl Parse. That was possible due to the work with Perl embed, and any of you who've ever read some of Larry Wall's prose on open source, well, you can see why we have such a great tool like that. RTCMix historically was a text-based language. You give it a text file, parse it, and run. In about 2000, we had the possibility to communicate to RTCMix via a TCP socket. This was a useful ability, but it was a little bit brittle, and of course there are obvious latency issues with that. And then in 2004, Brad Garten designed the RTCMix embed module, and it has also allowed for, as some of you may know, the RTCMix object in Max MSP also. So the examples I'll be showing specifically about the Perl buffer object in this environment, some generic sample patches, and some other patches, unfortunately, that I wasn't able to get working for this demo, particularly the video tracking object. If any of you know how to convert between YUV411 bits and RGBA 24 bits, please come see me after the show. I would love to know. And then if we have time, I'd like to get into a little bit about how the program is actually structured and how a graphical network environment like this works. What are some of the basic objects inside and some of the functions that make it happen. And then, of course, we'll talk about future directions. So that's the slideshow. Here's a simple example of an RTCMix script, for those of you who may have never seen one, in Perl. You have your comments, you have some basic commands to set up the audio device, load your synthesis and effects processing algorithms, and then the actual commands that do what you tell it to do. This one is a car plus strong, run through a reverb algorithm. Simple. Simple enough. But you know, we've had packages like that now for what, 20, 25 years, something. So thankfully, we had, in 2000, as I said, the TCP object, but more recently, this ability to have RTCMix embedded in any application. It's a C++ member class, and I'm just going to show some code that illustrates how simple it is to do. Here's how you stick it in your code. You instantiate a new RTCMix object. You send it basically text commands. And then in this particular application, it just grabs keys from the keypad and then pipes them out to these similar car plus strong algorithms. So, you know, with, let's see, how many? ...182 lines of code, you know, you have some very simple thing. Just illustrating how you can put it into your own application. So, okay, now we look at Gaia, which combines these techniques into a usable GUI. So as I said, it's a graphical network-based application. So you get a bunch of objects, you put them on your canvas, you move them around, you know, the basic thing, sliders, text boxes, number boxes, etc. But where this starts to differ from some of these other applications is in the Perl buffer object. So now you have an object, but it's actually a Perl interpreter running in real time. So I can put here in my script, and then send it a signal, or link it together, you know, with, I call this object a blinker. I believe it's called a bang in some other applications. So you get the basic idea. But the power comes when you're able to put multiple versions, you know, different Perl buffers all throughout your patch. This is what I meant when I said it can also be thought of as simply an IDE for Perl. You can have different subroutines, reevaluate them, fire them off in, you know, whatever order, so on and so forth. So let's see exactly how you get some of your data into these buffers. So here we have a very simple one. There are some reserve variables. I don't know if you can see them there. Yeah, I guess you can. You have in 0, in 1, in 2, etc. As many inputs and outputs as you need. And you simply send it the command. And then you get your input into the buffer. There are some, obviously, special features in the application to help the GUI let you, you know, do what you want to do. I have this concept of what I call local trigger. Here you have a signal that's sent through immediately. Here you have a signal that's only sent through when the parent object receives a signal. There are instances where you want to set parameters and not have them go through in real time. That's how I distinguish it with something called I call local trigger. Just giving you a flavor for what the application does with some of these basic scripts. Also, we have what's called a signal condition, where a signal only goes through the tree if it's met. And what this actually is a very small Perl buffer. So you can use, you know, I'm sort of exploiting Perl in various aspects of the application to do what I need for logical operators, mathematical operators, string processing, all the power of Perl. You get it for free. Okay, so let's look at something that actually makes some noise. Here, again, similar setup. You can have buffers that are what I call global in scope, which means they will execute as soon as you start up the script. These other buffers are actually Perl subroutines. The user doesn't see this, but when I grab this text and parse it within the program, I'm actually storing it as a subroutine. This way it doesn't have to be compiled by the interpreter every time you want it to run. You just call the subroutine. So here we have a simple one that just calls an RTCMix wavetable instrument. And it's just pulsing away. Sending your various parameters, nothing particularly fancy. So on. You have a timer. Other applications call it a metro, I think. You get the basic idea. Here's an example of how you can use something if you want to create a very quick and dirty sampler. You stash your sound files into an array, easy Perl syntax, and then since you have the power of Perl for free, you can use it here in a simple script to take your input to pick a different sound file. This example we use for students usually, where you map all the keys on a keyboard to a different sample, and you can do it in very few lines of code. As you see, well, this wasn't an example, but you know, with Perl you can just say system command ls all your sound files, and then slurp them into a larger array, and you're done. So in this case, I'm sending my signal, and I'm just outputting different sound files depending on the amplitude. Not particularly glamorous. Another example using FM, similar design to the wavetable one. I grab all of my input values here, map them to terms that make sense for me in the score file, and then I just send them a signal, execute them. Stuck. Let's see, one more example. Looking at Carl plus Strong, another, you know, same design basically, a little more complicated. I don't have any scripts with loops, but it goes without saying you can have very complicated scripts in here doing, you know, much more involved things than just single commands, which is all I'm doing here. So forth. Can have hours of fun with that. And I just want to illustrate to you how some of these other objects work. I'm really sad I didn't get the video tracker object working with FireWire because it's a neat one. The basic idea, you get this object, you start capture and you get an external window just to show you what's going on. And right now I'm just doing two very basic algorithms. What I call motion and occlusion. Motion is pixel difference from the previous frame. Occlusion is pixel difference from the start of a frame. This was motivated by a recent project at the University of Virginia, an installation called Trees, where we had Gaia running in an art gallery, and we had a camera sort of hidden in the corner of the room. The start frame was the empty room, and then as people walked in, occlusion values would change and the scripts would start. And then as people would move around, motion values would change, and the scripts would move from state to state. Any of you who are attending the NIME conference coming up, we're going to be showing how that worked there. And as with most other objects, if you want to get your data, you send it a signal, and you'll get both of those values out. Pretty basic. MIDI, I think, is a slightly different interpretation. There's no unpacking of bits or anything like that. You simply pick which MIDI event you want, and then you get it. You know, you just get the value. Similarly, these, you know, you can set them to be local trigger or not, and then your signal will pass through when the MIDI event comes in or not. So those are two other objects. So I don't know how many of you are familiar with GTK, but you can probably recognize some of these things, like the little buttons, the frames, the box packing technique, even down to the gamma curve object. You know, this is just a GTK primitive, and you get all this stuff for free. Anything in GTK, you can plug right into this application. So let me demonstrate the API that you use to do that. So here's the source code for the number box object. First thing you define is your properties window, sort of crude API for doing that though. Which values do you want to get from the user? A title, data, a double entry box for your initial value, max, min, scale, increment, a checkbox, do you want it to be local trigger, octave point pitch class, which is another means of notating musical data, and should it auto initialize its value? For example, when you connect it to another object, should it get that value right away? So okay, you're done with that. Signal function, all objects have. Most of the code in this section is the same for every object. You simply get your data in and broadcast it out through all the other connections. This object doesn't have a connection function, but it's another member function of the signal object class, where you can have a special function that executes when you connect one object to another. For example, we have a scale object. If you want that to read in maximum and minimum values from, say, a MIDI event, 0 to 127, to, say, FM index value, 0 to 1, it will automatically map those values for you, make your life a little bit easier. And then you have your basic creation function, where you grab your values, stash them into your object parameters. And what I want to show you, you define your boxes, which are those little connection slots, what type they are, input or output, north, south, east, or west, the location on the actual object. And then some simple GTK stuff. You create your adjustment, you pack in some GTK objects like a frame, a label. There's a good old GTK box packing technique. You pack your objects into the box. You have a top-level thing called the object widget. You store that. And then, where is it in here? You have a canvas object creation function, which I'm having trouble finding here. Well, I'm not finding it in here, but that's because that's what happens with demos. Anyway, this other function, it grabs the signal object data, and then you get back something that can be presented on the canvas. So that, in a nutshell, is how this thing works. As I had said before, future directions, as with most Linux applications, we all want to be ported to OS X. RTCMix does run under OS X, but I still have some work to do getting these specific GTK objects working under OS X. Right now, I'm technically using something called the GTK canvas. The real thing, obviously, I should be using is the GNOME canvas, but I haven't made the leap from GTK 1.2 to 2.0 yet, so that's one important area. Obviously, more objects, more objects for the canvas, different types of sliders, dial buttons, joystick controllers, things like that. And more testing. We do have documentation. This program is being used at the University of Virginia in one of our computer music courses. And we look forward to doing a lot more research. That's basically it. If there are any questions on how this works or...
Okay. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Matthias. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Dave.
One of the things I liked a lot about RTCMix was, of course, the ability to write using C syntax. I take it that's still available to me.
It's something that can be done. I don't have it for this particular version, but it's the same basic idea. You have the the RTCMix embed object, mm-hmm. which can take in single line commands or slurp in an entire buffer. In this case, the buffer is Perl, but the syntax you're talking about is minc. You can still feed minc to RTCMix. Okay. But the problem with that is that then you don't get subroutines for free, which in Perl you do. Yeah. So if you want to have more subroutines in your patch, can stick them in. But in minc, you're just limited. Each one would just have to be a sequence of lines and loops and things like that.
One other quick question, probably a few people might want to know too. What about ALSA support?
ALSA support for RTCMix is coming probably in a couple of weeks. Two things that are being rewritten inside RTCMix. You may have noticed all of these examples just sent pulsed timer signals to the given synthesis effect. There was no actual real-time control of p-fields. We have that. It's being completely rewritten so that each p-field is a separate class. Now that we have this embed module, there's no reason for you to have to send it some complicated sequence of code, note tag, and things like that. Since you have RTCMix as part of your application, you can retrieve back a class, a p-field class, that you can manipulate directly. So that's one thing. The other is ALSA support. We've redesigned. This was necessitated mostly by OS X. We needed to have RTCMix as a pull model. Initially, it was you send the audio device your buffer, your data, and then when it's full, it plays. That was sort of the OSS model. But now with OS 10, you need to have a callback attached to the audio device in order to suck the data in. And as I understand, this is how Jack works too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why, you know, we rewrote that so that we can have Jack support and also support.
Outstanding. Thank you.
Yeah.
Any further questions? We have plenty of time for discussion. Okay, then thank you, Dave, for this interesting talk.
One other question. Dave is a guy currently available.
Wait.
Yeah, sorry. It's one thing I noticed I didn't have in my slide.
The question was the availability of Gaia.
Yeah, it's currently in beta. One way is you can send me email at topper@virginia.edu. Also, the website presto.music.virginia.edu/pub/Gaia. If you can all remember that. It's the same as the RTCMix download site, except instead of pub RTCMix, it's pub Gaia. So it's there. It's in, you know, beta stage, as you can see. But yeah, feel free, download it, break it, send me bugs. Yeah, good question. Okay.
Okay, so then we will have a break and see you back at 12 for a talk by Matthew Bertner on spatial operational spectrosynthesis, a technique which was used in the piece we heard yesterday in the concert, right? So